this is your Polycast for Tuesday, February 28th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a new forecast shows the state budget surplus has grown, and Sunday liquor store sales will soon be the law. State finance officials released a revised economic forecast today that shows the projected budget surplus has grown to $1.65 billion. Minnesota Management and Budget says the state's financial outlook has improved, but significant risks remain due to unknown federal policy changes. The $1.65 billion surplus and additional forecast information will guide lawmakers as they craft a two-year budget in the remaining months of the 2017 legislative session. Republican House and Senate leaders will soon set their targets for spending and taxes based on the number. DFL Governor Mark Dayton used the November forecast, which showed a $1.4 billion surplus, to put together his budget plan. Minnesota's longtime ban on Sunday liquor store sales is a major step closer to ending. The state Senate passed legislation by a 38-28 vote that would give stores the option of opening for business on Sundays. The vote came a week after the House passed a similar bill in convincing fashion. Tim Pugmire has the story.
Previous attempts to allow Sunday liquor sales have failed badly in the Senate, but mounting public pressure and the influx of new senators and some changed minds among veteran lawmakers helped reverse that history. Republican Senator Jeremy Miller of Winona, the bill's chief sponsor, said a grassroots campaign in support of Sunday sales also had a major impact.
This is the strongest grassroots effort by the people that I've seen on any issue during my time in the Senate, and the people spoke loud and clear, and they made sure that their legislators knew what their thoughts were on this particular issue. It's not a new issue. It's an issue that we've been dealing with certainly all 7 years that I've been here, and I'm very happy that we were finally able to get it done.
But it's not quite done yet. A slight difference between the House and Senate bills on Sunday store hours will need resolution before the measure can become law. The House bill allows stores to open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sundays, while the Senate bill sets the hours from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Republican Representative Jennifer Loon of Eden Prairie, the sponsor of the House bill, said she and other leaders will soon decide their next step. She said they can accept the Senate language or begin conference committee negotiations.
Do I feel strongly about the one less hour? Not terribly.
DFL Governor Mark Dayton said last week that he will sign the bill if it reaches him. During the Senate debate, lawmakers shared strong opinions in support and in opposition to Sunday sales. First-term Republican Senator Scott Jensen of Chaska said his decision to support the bill came easily.
This is about personal liberty. It's about freedom. It's about not constraining the marketplace. So this isn't a difficult vote for me at all. I'd say government, try to get out of the way whenever you can.
DFL Senator Susan Kent of Woodbury said she's heard from liquor store owners who want to be open on Sundays.
When I talk to people in my community, living very close to a border state, there are small businesses who feel like they are constrained from being able to compete effectively because they do not currently have that option.
But opponents argued that the change will hurt small liquor stores, especially in rural Minnesota. DFL Senator David Tomasoni of Chisholm said he's concerned that many of those stores can't afford to keep their doors open an additional day.
They'll have to open on Sunday, and they'll have to employ some people, and there's absolutely no guarantee whatsoever that they will actually sell more than they would have had they just bought it on Saturday.
Republican Senator Dave Senjum of Rochester said he doesn't particularly care about the change, but he sees no pressing reason for it.
Any desirous drinker that can't plan well enough, isn't smart enough, isn't able enough to buy their booze on Saturday night probably shouldn't be drinking on Sunday anyway.
Senjum also noted that lifting the Sunday ban won't necessarily open liquor stores in every community. Municipal prohibitions on Sunday sales will remain in effect unless local officials reverse them. In addition to allowing Sunday sales beginning in July, the legislation prohibits liquor store deliveries, ordering, or marketing on Sundays. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
The Dayton administration has announced a new effort to increase Minnesota's renewable energy standard. Wind and solar currently account for about 21% of Minnesota's electricity. The legislation would more than double that by 2030. Elizabeth Dunbar has the story.
Signs that renewable energy is a big part of Minnesota's economy, both now and in the future, are everywhere here at Riverland Community College in Albert Lea.
That's a 20 kW wind turbine that is feeding power to the building. We use that as a training platform.
Steve Viator leads the college's renewable energy program, and this morning he led Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith on a tour of the college's facilities.
They spend so much time in the classroom, and then we look at the basics of an electrical circuit. And what I want you to know is, when we talk about electrical circuits, you know, if it's a branch circuit, type of circuit, it's a branch circuit in the wind turbine, it's a branch circuit in industrial maintenance, it's a branch circuit in a commercial or school. You know, so
very versatile.
Well,
right,
right. The nice thing about it is these students can go many different directions.
Lately, renewable energy job growth has been outpacing other sectors of the state's economy. According to Dayton administration officials, clean energy jobs grew by 78% in Minnesota between 2000 and 2014, compared to 11% overall. Their analysis shows the industry supports more than 15,000 jobs and creates $1 billion in economic activity. When Riverland student Noel Ruiz was pursuing his GED in Austin, his teachers helped him look up which careers had promising job prospects.
I looked on wind turbine technology and it was just skyrocketing up, and I decided to go for it.
Ruiz has been working at the Hormel plant in Austin for the past 4 years, but the 25-year-old says he's enthusiastic about working in renewable energy because it's important for the environment.
Keeping what we call black gold down, and we don't want to be drilling more.
Oil is something Minnesota lacks. Same goes for other fossil fuels like coal and natural gas. Lieutenant Governor Smith says further tapping into the wind and sun instead of fossil fuels presents an economic development opportunity to the state. She says it gives utilities, companies, even training programs like Riverland's a roadmap.
That kind of predictability is gained when we can all come together and set a clear goal, which is what I hope we do on the renewable energy standard.
But the politics over renewable energy have changed dramatically since 2006, when Republican Governor Tim Pawlenty signed Minnesota's first renewable energy mandate. It called for 25% renewable energy by 2025. Back then, gas was more expensive, and we were worried about relying too heavily on foreign oil and natural gas. But Republicans like Pawlenty were also talking about climate change as real and in need of bold action. Today, it's hard to find many Republican politicians who would say that. Two Republicans have signed on to the latest renewable energy proposal, but neither is in a position to ensure the bill even gets a hearing in the Republican-controlled legislature. They don't sit on the House or Senate energy committees. And at least one legislative energy leader says he opposes the proposed mandate.
There is bipartisan opposition to increasing energy mandates in Minnesota.
Republican Representative Pat Garofalo of Farmington chairs the House Energy Committee.
There's a lot of concern, particularly among rural legislators, about what an energy mandate is going to mean to reliability and cost. So going forward, I think it's more along the lines of a focus of achieving both cleaner and cheaper energy, not just one or the other.
Lieutenant Governor Smith acknowledges the latest effort faces an uphill battle, but she says she hopes people also think about the costs to public health and the environment if the state continues to rely heavily on fossil fuels.
You know, if you don't set out big goals for where you're trying to get to, you never get there.
While Minnesota is meeting its renewable energy law, it's behind on goals to reduce overall greenhouse gas emissions. Those come not only from power plants, but also from cars and trucks, agriculture, factories, and landfills. Reporting on the environment, Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News, Albert Lea.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.